This time of year is the time for outdoor activities, which can include camping, hiking, going to parks, and outdoor concerts. It's also the time of year for the attack of the ticks, which in recent years, especially in New Jersey and New York, has resulted in a significant rise in cases of Lyme disease. My next guest joins us with information about how high-tech science is seeking to learn more about the tick-borne viruses that result in Lyme disease and how to combat them, along with being the director of the Lyme and Tick-Borne Diseases Research Center at Columbia University Irving Medical Center. He is a co-author of the book Conquering Lyme Disease, Science Bridges the Great Divide, Dr. Brian Fallon. How are you today, sir?
I am very well, thank you.
And learn more about the doctor's work, cumc.columbia.edu. And again, his book, Conquering Lyme Disease, Science Bridges the Great Divide. Again, you get that at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, your favorite means of purchasing a book. For the person that's not been aware of Lyme disease, just give us some basics about it. Is Lyme disease Lyme disease? Does it have variables? How does it impact people?
Oh, Lyme disease varies in terms of how it affects people. Sometimes it can cause a very mild illness. Sometimes it can cause a very severe illness. So the most important point, if there's any from this interview, is for people to recognize is that Lyme disease is not something to be dismissed. It's something to pay attention to. And if you think you've been acquired Lyme disease or acquired infection from a tick bite, you should be evaluated as soon as possible. And if you have a rash that expands in size, that most likely is a Lyme rash, and you should be treated with antibiotics. Let me tell you a little bit about Lyme disease and then a little bit about some of the other organisms that the ticks carry. So Lyme disease is caused by a bacteria. The bacteria is called Borrelia burgdorferi. It's a spirochete. When the tick bites you, it attaches and it secretes its abdominal contents into your skin. That usually takes about 24 hours to do. So if you remove the tick quickly, which is another important point, if you remove the tick quickly, you're much less likely to acquire the microbe that causes Lyme disease than if you let it stay on you for 24 or more hours. So that's why frequent tick checks during the spring and summer and fall is a very good idea. Certainly taking a shower at the end of the day is likely a good idea, because then if you feel a bump or something or if something is loosely attached, if there's a tick crawling on you, it'll be washed off. However, the ticks are extremely small. They're about the size of a poppy seed at this time of the year. And because they're so small, you might not feel it. You might not see it until it starts getting its blood meal, which so then it engorges and it gets maybe the size of a very small raisin. And then you'll feel it, you'll recognize it, and then it needs to be removed. Don't remove it with a match. Don't remove it with heat. Don't remove it with Vaseline, because all those things will get the tick upset, and it will vomit its contents further into your skin, which is the last thing you want. So what you should do is take tweezers and gently go underneath as deep as you can, close to the skin, and pull up, and the tick will eventually let go, and you'll remove the tick that way.
Almost like removing a bee and making sure you don't get the stinger left in you.
Yeah, and sometimes the head is left, and you know, if you can remove that, great. But if you can't, it's most likely not going to be a problem, and it'll detach on its own later.
And as you said, there are variables in how Lyme disease is formed and how it impacts people. There is such a thing as chronic Lyme disease.
There is. So the initial symptom usually is the rash, but some people don't see the rash. And then they might later, 6 months later, 3 months later, 9 months later, develop, let's say, a swollen joint. They might, a few weeks later after the infection, they might set, or the first week, they might develop flu-like symptoms, muscle pains, mild fever. They might get joint pains. They might get cognitive problems where they have a hard time remembering things. They might have verbal fluency problems. They might have shooting pains, stabbing pains, neck pain, headache. It can be quite a miserable illness. Sometimes it can go to the heart, and when it goes to the heart, it can cause cardiac arrhythmias, and that can actually lead to death. in certain circumstances, especially in young people, it seems. So this is a very serious illness, and it needs to be treated. Fortunately, the antibiotics are very effective in helping to fight off the Lyme spirochete. So standard antibiotics taken for 2 to 3 weeks can be very helpful. Doxycycline, amoxicillin, cefuroxime are some very good antibiotics that are effective. Not everybody, unfortunately, has a complete response, and sometimes people relapse. And then the question that's considered to be controversial by some in the medical community is what to do with these patients who relapse. So that's an area of active investigation, and our studies and some studies from other people suggest that a repeated course of antibiotic therapy can be helpful for people who have relapsing, remitting symptoms.
We're talking to Dr. Brian Fallon, who is the director of the Lyme and Tick-Borne Disease Research Center at Columbia University Irving Medical Center. He's also co-author of Conquering Lyme Disease, Science Bridges, The Great Divide, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. With the unknown aspects of Lyme disease or the recurrence, and then the questions come about, how much is high-tech science playing a role in dealing with Lyme disease today?
Well, I'm really happy to say that this is a very exciting time in medicine in general and a very exciting time for Lyme disease research specifically. And it's exciting for me because there are so many advanced technologies that have developed over the last 10 years that allow us to do things that we couldn't have done previously. So, for example, new diagnostic tests that are much more sensitive are being developed. New diagnostic tests that are that can actually detect active infection as opposed to just the antibody response are being developed. And these are being developed because of sophisticated technology and because of sophisticated computer science that allows you to mathematically model things and deal with very, very large databases of information. Just to give you an example of some exciting work that happens today, you can take the old way of doing medicine is, let's say, with infectious disease, to say, okay, what's the cluster of symptoms? What do I think the diagnosis is based on this cluster of symptoms? And that, obviously, is the way all doctors have been trained, and it's very important because most of the time you can make a diagnosis by the clinical history alone. However, sometimes there are patients for whom you can't figure out what the cause of the encephalitis is, which is, let's say, an inflammation of the brain. And you look at the spinal fluid and you take a guess, well, maybe this is herpes, maybe this is Lyme disease. So you take a guess and the guess turns out wrong and the tests are negative or maybe the tests aren't sensitive enough. So then you're kind of scratching your head trying to figure out how to help this person who's in a severe state and might well die if you can't figure out what the cause of the encephalitis is. Well, there are certain approaches now that use what are called discovery-based techniques as opposed to what I call, or others call, the fishing pole technique. The fishing pole technique is looking for one fish, knowing what you might want to get, and looking for it, and that's, say, looking for herpes, or looking for Lyme disease, or looking for syphilis. The discovery approach is saying, okay, I'm going to cast a much wider net, and I'm going to take a good amount of fluid, of spinal fluid or blood, and I'm going to search for every possible microbe that I could find. Not by knowing in advance what might be there or guessing in advance what might be there, but by taking a look, let's say, at all of the genetic pieces of genetic material that's in that pool of fluid, and then sequencing that fluid, and then sending it up to a database, and then seeing with this database in the cloud what these genetic sequences match up with, and then once you can find out what it matches up with. Then within a very short period of time, let's say within 24 to 48 hours, you can actually determine what the infection was. So this is a completely different approach to science and medicine than had been used 10 years earlier, mainly because the technology wasn't there 10 years earlier. So that's very exciting. Another exciting thing is that we have access to massive numbers of electronic medical records right now. So you can probe 20 million records, 100 million records. Here at Columbia, where there's a consortium that has the ability to look at 400 million records of people from around the world, representing 80 different countries, to ask medical scientific questions. And that can only be done because computer science is so great and bioinformatics has developed so much that that kind of work can be done. So I say to patients right now, and this is what we put in our book, Conquering Lyme Disease, that there is a lot of excitement and a lot of new things going on in diagnostics, new things going on in treatment. There are new infections, unfortunately, being discovered in the ticks because of the ability to probe and discover new microbes. So it's unfortunate that they're there, but it's good that now we know they're there because that will help us target our treatment approaches better. So there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. And there are also new prevention approaches as well. And prevention is key because these ticks are problematic. And if you can prevent the disease in the first place, then you don't have to worry about diagnosis and treatment.
This is true. When you look in New Jersey with last year's stats, over almost 5,100 reported cases of Lyme disease. That was the highest in almost two decades. The trend certainly calls on as much prevention as possible, and with the high-tech aspect that Dr. Fallon just mentioned, the idea that diagnosis can be more fine-tuned and, in turn, recovery time can be expedited as well. It's all headed in the right direction, which is always nice to hear with any aspect of medical science. Learn more about what we've talked about here, Doctor's book, Conquering Lyme Disease, Science Bridges, The Great Divide. He is the director of the Lyme and Tick-Borne Diseases Research Center at Columbia University Irving Medical Center. Dr. Brian Fallon, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.